The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Boston Red Sox just wrapped up a four-game series against the Baltimore Orioles, taking two games, dropping two, scoring 20 runs, and allowing 20 runs. We can be found at Bastards_Boston. Our current standings right now, 65-58, currently third place in the AL East. 7.5 games back of the AL East leading Yankees. We are fourth in the wild card standings, 3 games behind the Royals when I last checked. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach, in South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Jeremy, how are you doing, and where can the fans find you on Twitter?
I'm extremely medium, and you can find me at JTShill20 on Twitter.
And he knew his handle, Terry. You have no material now. Terry, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
I am doing splendid as always. You can find me at CushmanMLB. Terry Talks Sox on Facebook. You can find the Bastards on Instagram and our Substack blog. I haven't told everyone yet, but our next piece will be on Tyler O'Neill. We'll get into that later. So you can find some in-print content on what his future could be. And we won one more game than I thought we would. So, you know, you can't really be mad at that point to split with Baltimore. But we did lose ground on the Royals by at least a half a game, I think. And we are, even though we're 3 behind, we're 4 behind in the win column. And I think that matters a little bit.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I always like to do before we begin is checking what Jeremy's number was. We've been flirting with 5s and 6s. At one point we were tickling 7.2. I don't think we're there anymore, but Jeremy, what's your level of comfortability at right now?
I feel like we're holding on by a thread, and while I consider the Orioles series a success because I didn't expect it to go this way, we're just constantly on the edge of going the wrong way. And with the Royals playing the way they are, you know, they have to step on the accelerator and go, and time's running out. So I have it at a 5.5 today. And I'll be interested where we are next Sunday, because that could be below 5 with 2 tough teams and essentially 2.5 starting pitchers.
So I guess I'll take 5.5 real quick as well. So when I started taking down notes, we were 7.5. Now we're 7 out. And then as far as the wild card, it's actually not 3. We're 3.5 out behind Kansas City. I was actually really curious to hear what you were going to say, Jeremy, about your number. I thought you were going to be closer to like maybe a 5.8, 5.9 after the 12 run slashing that we gave up. But there were so many silly moments in that game that were just horrifying. I think without further ado, let's start off on a high note. Let's go off with our studs here.
My temperature is a little high, though. I keep getting
yours is high.
I keep getting.
I'm a little nervous to ask you, Terrence.
I keep getting skipped in this segment, but I just wanted to make one observation, because there's no other time for me to really get this out other than now. Zach Eflin, the Orioles gave up their 10th and 15th ranked prospects for him. We could have beat that. He's got 1 year of control beyond this year. I think he's in his early 30s, so he would be an extension candidate. You could probably You know, you could probably offer him a 4-year extension beyond this, and just imagine how much different we look right now with an Eflin type guy in our rotation. And watching him pitch, I mean, we've seen it with Tampa. You know, he's been in the division for a few years now. The more I watch him pitch, the more he kind of reminds me of John Lackey. I don't know what it is about him. He doesn't have the postseason pedigree, obviously, but just very solid and stable out there. And that's exactly what we need. And it's a bummer that he's pitching against us and will be next year as well.
You know, I'm not going to lie. I don't remember why we started doing that with Jeremy and not you, but I always felt like whatever number I got from Jeremy, I could assume that your number would be 0.4, 0.5 lower. So I kind of want to go with the positive before we
give a number, Terry.
Yeah, he's going to say 4.9.
I mean, I've never really understood the scale, even though I've had a front row seat to it all along. So if I'm madder, or is it the number higher?
Yeah, it's the 1 to 10 scale. Okay. 1, like, stop watching completely. 10, we're going to win the World Series in a sweep.
Well, the reason why I ask is because if that's the case, your number, I would always assume your number would be higher than a 5 or 6, because I would say I'm perpetually about a 7. All season long, I'm about a 7.
I'm sure your Twitter followers would agree. Yeah.
Why do I not believe
so
this?
So here's my take on Terry's take.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Right. Like, so it's like, well, why didn't we give up better prospects? And we could have extended him for 4 years. And yeah, Terry, we're going to rehire Dombrowski. We're going to go get Tito. David Ortiz has 100 at-bats left in him. I mean, is there any other things that we know aren't going to happen that you want to have happen? I mean, well, to me, the whole thing is, it's one thing. It always goes back to one thing for me. This ownership probably didn't even take that option seriously, because they don't want to give up those sorts of assets. And they're certainly not going to give them up to someone that there is a 0.0 chance they're going to spend the money on a 4-year contract.
So, but you don't disagree that it should have happened.
Of course I agree. It should have happened.
Okay. And that's all I care about.
And traded Casas. And we should have also went and got a left-handed starter. And we should have signed a left-handed starter in the offseason. Okay. I mean, we could create a whole list on that. I don't disagree with that point.
As long as you agree that it should have happened, I'm good with it. And it's not realistic. It's just we have a dumbass that's in charge of it. And that's what's frustrating to me.
Okay, I agree on that too.
We're off the rails. Already. We're off the rails.
It's getting spicy. So let's stay positive. Terrence, your studs, please.
Notice how Charlie pluralized studs. So I'm kind of going to lump a couple guys together. I'm not a big fan of doing this, but I think it is appropriate in this case. I'm going with Chris Martin and Kenley Jansen. Now, they pitched games 2 and 3. It was a 4-game set. So 2 and 3 were the games we won. And they were the literal stoppers in game 2. All game long, the Orioles would get out 2 or 3 ahead of us, and then we'd catch back up, and then they'd put up another 2 or 3, and then we'd catch back up. But then you kind of knew when Chris Martin came in and then Jansen behind him, you kind of had a feeling, okay, well, they'll stop the bleeding and kind of secure the victory. And that's exactly what happened. And game 3 was a little bit less dramatic because we had the lead. The Orioles were threatening. I want to say it was the 8th inning. They had the bases loaded. There were 2 outs. Anthony Santander, arguably their most clutch hitter, came to the plate. And, you know, the Red Sox were able to get out of that. And I just can't imagine, like, we'd get swept if we didn't have those two at the back end of your bullpen. Who else was going to stop this Orioles offense? And the other thing that's kind of looming large right now is these guys are both free agents at the end of the year. They're both probably going to get at least 1 or 2 year deals at a decent annual value. I don't know if Kenley will be $16 million again. I don't see why he wouldn't, to be honest, because, I mean, he has had a fantastic year. But they're not going to be cheap, let's put it that way, even if they're one-year deals. And the scary thing about it is Breslow's going to have to try to resolve this. Now, you do have Whitlock coming back, and you're going to hear a theme from me all winter long. he had the bracing procedure, not the normal Tommy John. So did Giolito. So there's not a ton of data on this being successful with pitchers. Position players have had it, but hopefully it is. Hopefully it is successful, but I can't help but be skeptical. So potentially Whitlock at the back end, and then you're going to have Liam Hendricks, who we should see at least have an idea of what he's going to be before the end of the season. Like, by September, he should be ready, and you should see a solid month of him. So we'll have a good idea of whether or not he'll be the closer next year. And he had actual Tommy John, so there's no real concerns there about the, you know, the structural status of his elbow. But man, you know, Martin and Jansen have been so good. And like I said, you know, they helped you win two games here. And I'm just a little bit nervous about the future if we're not going to have either one of them.
Jeremy.
I think we're going to get Sam Kennedy to lie to us and say that it's going to be Hendricks and Whitlock. We've already have the pieces in place to transition to the future, which you've touched on, Terry. I think it's got to be Sam Kennedy. I think Breslow's not as good at lying. Sam Kennedy is like unbelievable. Like, if I need somebody to lie for me, you got to call Sam Kennedy. I mean, I agree with you. It's an issue with no organizational depth. It's not like this is going to be somebody that's going to be promoted. The only other thing is, especially in Martin's case, he's at the point of his career where he's a year-to-year guy. There's no two-year deals. No one's can't be that stupid, especially now that the injury history is creeping up. So you may have to pay more now than you wanted to because of his recent performance, especially if he goes through September pitching like this. He's a guy I could see coming back. Jansen's gone. Why would Jansen come here when he should go do what everyone does at the end of their career, which is take a little bit less and be on a club that has a chance to win the whole thing? I mean, I would do that. I'd go pitch the eighth inning for Philadelphia way before I would close games in Boston, given the state of those two rosters. You know, the other thing I'll say is bullpen arms can be lightning in a bottle. And so you can go out and get a power arm from a different team and take a shot and get two or three guys like that and hope one of them catches on, which is probably what they're going to do. But it's troubling. I thought the tweet, Terry, when you did this a couple nights ago, was a good tweet, and it really got me thinking about it. And I mostly agree with your sentiments. I think it's a serious problem for 2025.
So there's a lot to talk about when it comes to Martin. I agree with everything you just said, Jeremy. No surprises there. He's 38, I think. So year to year is going to be the best he gets. I think that's absolutely true. He pitched better in 2023 than he did this year in 2024. There was also it's unfortunately, it's not a shot at him, but dealing with the things that he dealt with this year, some teams may be a little bit cautious to give Martin a potential two-year deal. I actually think that Martin could potentially come back if he's willing to take a lot less money on a one-year deal, if he really wants to play in Boston as a seventh, eighth inning guy, if he can maintain that. And I think both of you are right with Hendricks for 1 year. The issue is that we had Jansen and Martin for two. So the situation that we're going to be expecting, you know, where we're going to be lied to, is only going to be for 1 year. So what's the contingency and what's the plan for 2026? I don't want to hear the word bridge year. I don't want to hear gap year. I don't want to hear we're planning on. I don't want to hear any of that stuff. We've been there. We've done that. It's over. We have been so dependent on Jansen and Martin this year and honestly have added multiple wins above replacement. Jansen went over a month and a half without allowed one run in almost 2 months. If you look back at his numbers, I'm not looking at them right now, but I remember looking at it like, wow, every single time Jansen comes in, we're set. We have no idea what Liam Hendricks is going to do. I really like everything I've seen so far. He's yelling at himself. He's cussing. He does all the things like I would do if I was on the mound, just like firing yourself up. But truth be told, I really don't know what I can personally expect from Hendricks next year. And if the assumption is that Slayton's going to be the eighth inning guy, is he going to be Martin 2023? Is he going to be Martin 2024? Are we going to see something else? I mean, are we going to see something that we haven't seen before and it's going to be a catastrophe? I don't know. So I'm going to remain positive with the idea of Hendricks being a good solution. I mean, Jansen's getting $16 million this year. Martin, I think, was getting $9 or $9.5 million this year. So that's almost $26 million on the books for those two cats. Hendricks is making $6 million next year. So that gives you $19 million where that's not going towards those two guys. If Martin's willing to take maybe $5, maybe $6 million, maybe you kind of flirt with that. I don't think he will, but if he does, there's a possibility that the Red Sox would do that. They've been known to do that, where they'll throw money at players that there's a familiarity with. So there, I won't reject that idea, because literally anything's possible. You can never have enough arms, as every team is finding out abundant, like in perfect fashion. 2024, I don't think there's ever been a year where so many starting pitchers have gone down, so many relievers have gone down, so many rookies who have come into the bigs have gone down. Like, it's literally insane. So they've meant everything to our club, and they've been incredibly vital to our club. Could you imagine if, you know, we had Craig Kimbrel as our closer this year? We'd be, you know, I think in a little bit worse shape. Yeah, I'm sure some games would have been better locked down, but some games would have also escaped us and gotten away. Terry, I know you had something you wanted to add.
Yeah, a couple things. So with Hendricks, like I said, you're going to have a month. Now, if he's not pitching well over that month, they're very up and down, I don't think you can go into 2025 saying he's definitely my closer. You might be able
to, I agree with you.
You might be able to be cautiously optimistic he could pitch somewhere between the seventh and the ninth, but I wouldn't put all my eggs in that basket. Number two, I think you have to offer Martin what he's making now, because that's how important he is to you. So I think you got to at least give him that much, and then be willing to go up, which is $8 million, by the way. And then you have to be willing to go up to 10. And if he says, nope, no, thank you, I want to test the market. Okay, fair enough. Go test the market. And then we probably don't bring him back. But I think that's the path you have to take with him. If you look at Kike Hernandez, he was making $7 million a year for 2 years. And then the summer going into his free agency, he was given a 1 year, I think, $10 million deal. So he got a bit of a bump. So I'd at least offer him what he's getting now if you're serious about wanting to bring him back. And I would say it's almost critical that you do it.
I understand where you're coming from, Terry, and I think that's an adorable thought. I don't see it as being realistic, though. You don't get better with age. This isn't like a fine wine. Players don't maintain their ability typically. I'll say that much, typically. Chris Martin is a rare breed where it took him a little while to kind of figure it out. His last 3 years in the bigs, the last year that he was with the Dodgers, and really the first year of the Red Sox deal, he was one of the best relievers in all of baseball. This year, though, has taken a little bit of a step back. So if the Red Sox were to approach him and say, hey, listen, we want you to come back, we're trying to build and get some other guys in here, would you be amenable to $8 million or $7.5 million? I don't think he would say no.
Well, that he's making eight now, so I think he's
making $9.5 million now. I just checked.
Oh,
now.
Is he nine? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, nine. So if he takes a little bit of a tick down, if he takes maybe a $2 million discount to stay with the Red Sox, I wouldn't say no to that if I'm Chris Martin. I have a guaranteed spot in this bullpen. I know that I'll be here for games 1 through 162. I don't see him saying no to that. Jeremy, anything you want to add?
Yeah, they're going to say no if a contender offers similar money.
Maybe.
I mean, that's it. Period. The best chance you have is Chris Martin's wife, for whatever reason, loves the Boston area and doesn't want to take their kids out of the school system they're in, or something crazy like that. Would you ever blame a 38, 39-year-old, which is what we're talking about here,
right,
reliever, at the tail end of their career? Team A is Boston. They offer you $7.5 million. Team B is the Los Angeles Dodgers. They offer you $7 million. It's a complete no-brainer.
That's a no-brainer. Okay, Dodgers offer you $4 million. Would you still go to L.A.?
For Jantz, I don't know, because I don't know how much they value the dollar. Like, and I never blame athletes, ever.
Right, exactly.
Taking every last penny. But, like, if you're Jansen and you have career – I think his career earnings over $100 million, like, maybe yes for him, no for Martin, because Martin has not made anywhere near that much money.
Right.
So, you know, it depends.
This is all under the premise that they do it now before the season ends. If you let him go to free agency, he's gone. Most likely 100%, gone.
But I've been, I've said that all year, or at least since I've been back on the podcast. I've said that if you like the guy, go get him now. There's nothing that precludes you from doing it.
Yeah, it doesn't affect
this
year.
Except for Breslow being a bitch.
And that.
Jeremy, to your point, it's actually exceeding $150 million for Kenley Jansen.
Yeah. I mean, so Kenley, if he wants to go win a series, then that's important to him, then the money offered by – it's just going to be who offers him anything, any contract. Now, Martin, I don't know what his career earnings. I would say it's less than 30. You know, I don't –
You're close.
Yeah.
You're very close. It's 40. It's just under 40 million. So
yeah. I mean, it's a lot of money, but you don't know how expensive these guys live. You know, if he's, if he's living like he's still going to be making $7 million a year, then that's going to be difficult for him to say no to the money. If he's living under his means and has money for the rest of his life, then who knows? But, you know, I just, and it goes to the way they built the roster. If we went and bought in at the trade deadline and said, guys, we are trying to win, this would be a different conversation.
Right.
But because you don't have management showing you, the team, the fan base, but also the clubhouse, we are dead set on winning, these conversations are a lot easier to have. But you can't do what you did and then go into a Martin Jansen negotiation and say with a straight face, we're committed to winning, we want you. No, you know who's committed to winning? L.A. You know who's also committed to winning? Baltimore and Philly and all these other teams that are actually showing that they want to win.
Literally every other team in the AL East is committed to winning. Tampa had the injury bug.
Minus the double Rays.
I wouldn't say the Rays are committed to winning, shelling off what they're shelling. Glasnow got traded last year. Rosarena just – that. You don't trade those players and say, oh, yeah, we're winning 100.
Yeah,
that's not happening.
But they'll have Springs back. They do have him back now, actually. They'll
have back. That's correct.
McClanahan back next year. I think they just kind of knew. Like, we're hurt this year. They're gonna contend next year. I guarantee it.
Do you think Shane McClanahan's going to stay in Tampa Bay? Because I definitely
is
don't.
Is he a free agent? I don't think
I don't know, but they just got rid of Glasnow. Glasnow left for L.A. and got I think it was like – 5-year, $130-140 million deal, something like that. I forget what the numbers were, but he got paid as soon as he got to LA. I would be shocked if McClanahan is also not one of those names that gets moved for a team that's willing to pay for him. Think about it. He was out all of 2024.
He doesn't hit arbitration though until 2026. So I'm talking 2025 here. They're not going to move him this winter. I'll bet anything you want he's on their roster. Opening day.
I would not be surprised if he gets moved before the deadline.
Well, that's a different story, but yeah. But I think Tampa's going to be good next year. I'd pencil him in for 90 wins. I really would.
Holy crap. 90 wins. Okay, right on. Well, we're going to shift over into Jeremy's stud for this one. I'm excited. Who do you got?
Brian Baio. So on Friday in a football score type baseball game, the Boston Red Sox started Bernardino. I'm not going to read every name. And then went through an additional 8 total pitchers, basically the whole staff minus the starters, the other 4 starters. This start on Saturday was huge just for that, but also the fact that this thing goes the wrong way. If you go lose Saturday and you end up losing on Sunday, it goes the wrong way. And my 5.5 becomes a 4-point-something, and you're facing the Astros and the Rangers coming off of a game where you potentially have to go bullpen game. So this was a big start. All the pressure was on him, and he came through 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, which I don't love, as by the way, 6 strikeouts, 97 pitches. And they were able to use Bernardino and Sims to get to the aforementioned Martin Jansen combo. you know, just generally speaking with the player, he just looks like a different, like he's in a different headspace. He's confident. He's pitching with rhythm. You know, it's just different nonverbal communication from Brian Baio. And I'm starting to be optimistic moving forward that we can expect quality starts from Brian Baio time in and time out. So big start, big performance, big win, keeps you in it, gives you a chance, but you got to get hot. Like I said, you got to get hot sometime real, real soon.
Terry.
So Saturday was his, let's see, counting them on the fly, seventh straight start of three earned runs or less. In all but one of those, he had six or more strikeouts, which was a complaint of mine. Like there, he'd go through a stretch where he'd be striking out just two or three per game. The one thing that has been a consistent concern, at least in the last three straight, is that he did walk three guys in each of those appearances. So just a little bit of fine tuning there, but he took a no hitter. That was my Uber night, so I was listening to it in the car, but he took a no hitter into what, the fifth or sixth inning, something like that. And then gave up a solo shot. So I think that was the one game I had the Red Sox winning, but even so, I in the back of your mind, you're like, they could tune him up. His nice little run could come to an end with this offense. And he just absolutely locked in. And while we don't know what his ceiling truly is at this point, I think we can identify that it's more of a mental battle for him. That's what it is every time out. It's not just him versus the batter in the batter's box. It's him versus himself sometimes. And that gets in the way of his execution. So he's been the best starting pitcher since mid-July, basically since after the All-Star break. He has been your best starting pitcher. Now just imagine where we would be right now. We would, at a minimum, we would probably be in possession of that third wildcard spot if he was pitching this way, you know, the majority of the season. If his pre-All-Star break was better, you combine that with the strong starts Crawford and Houck had, the fact that he's carrying the rotation at this point, it would have been a different animal at this point. So it's unfortunate, but at least he's showing you something here in the second half, and you know, we'll have a better idea of what we're dealing with this winter as we're putting next year's rotation together.
Jeremy.
I already gave you my take, actually, Charlie, it's you.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Yes. I'm just so
I could go through it again if you weren't listening.
No. So I was actually looking through Brian Baio's starts in order, and the number of starts in between his 10th and 11th win is actually kind of crazy when you think about it. Five appearances without registering a win. The Red Sox only lost one of those games. Terry touched up on the fact that he did have three walks and three straight, but one thing that's actually not a concern, which I'm happy considering his pitching repertoire, is the home run ball, not really a concern. So far this month, only two home runs. They didn't do the craziest amount of damage. We are winning his games when he pitches. The only game that we have not won for him was that Dodgers game. We talked about the fact that we're getting quality starts, and I know, Terry, you're going to be getting jazzed about this one in a little bit. That was one of my gripes for the longest time, was we did not have starting pitchers that could give us a quality start, which would drive me absolute batty. I'm content with what I've seen so far. The concern is still, for me, that ERA. It is going down, thank goodness, because it was almost, actually it was at one point over 5.5, so we've brought it down to 4.8. The month of June absolutely crucified him. Home run ball, again, not cursing him, but was giving up hits, walking batters, just couldn't get it done. The following month being July, a little bit better. And so far this month, he's done a lot better. So I love seeing this coming from Bayo, especially given the fact that there were so many question marks with Bayo at the beginning of the year. There were a lot of issues with our rotation. Is Bayo going to be taking a step up to be your number one or your number two? Not yet. And the ERA started becoming an issue. Right now, Bayo slots in, I mean, on paper, probably your three or four. It would be awesome to see him get up to like a number two in your rotation for that ceiling. I don't know if we'll ever see him be that elite number one, because there are very few people in my eyes that deserve the title of elite number one. You may have a starter that's first in your rotation. Doesn't mean they're elite. It just happens to be that you're the best starter on the team. I would love to see Bayo become, you know, that number two guy, you know, joining that supporting cast. 5 2/3 innings, no hit baseball, and you gave up a home run to Henderson. So one of the best players in all of baseball. And that was who you gave up your first home run to. And it was a changeup. I think it was like a low and outside when he ripped it. And it was, you know, home run, single, strikeout, night over. Thanks for coming. But if anybody said, oh yeah, Brian Bayo is going to get you 5+ no hit innings, is anyone going to raise their hand and say, yeah, sure, I'll take that bet? Absolutely not. This was an incredible performance for Bayo. Definitely one that I'm very excited for. And I hope he can build on this, because if he can, maybe something to look forward to for 2025, because I don't know if we're going to have enough in the tank to keep pushing for a playoff spot for 2024. Anything else that either one of you gents want to add? Yeah, Terry.
In those seven starts I mentioned, he's got a 3.59 ERA.
Not bad. Eon's better than that. You know, my gosh, month of June, disastrous, 8.25. So for this stud that I have next, and, you know, Terry, you're going to be eating a lot of sauce on this one. I've got Yoshida. You know, I mean, this is the guy who, you know, we know that you love him. 7 for 11, 5 singles, had a double, another home run, had an insane second game of this series. I think it's time that we actually give this man the credit he deserves. If Yoshida, Duran, and Devers are not having great games, we're not winning series. And we're not winning games the way that we did. We won the second game of this series because of Yoshida's hit. That home run propelled us to the W. You know, we have pitchers that figure out ways to make the games exciting for all the wrong reasons. Yoshida had 2 multi-hit games. And if you look at his numbers, Yoshida's been playing out of his mind, even with pinch hit duties, a double, a walk. If you look at his numbers from the beginning of the year, Terrence, you look at his numbers in August, through yesterday's action, because we haven't counted today's yet, 19 hits and 54 at-bats. He's hitting .352, 3 homers, 10 RBIs. He's got 4 doubles. The fun number, 7 strikeouts. Had another 2 hits today to raise his average to, hold on, 21 for 57. Let me look that up real quick.
362. 298.
Sorry, for the month of August?
Oh, I thought you were talking about the whole season.
Oh, no. Yeah, he's almost at 300. You know, this is wild. This is wild for him. And this was a guy at the beginning of the year that he just was hitting like 230 and it just wasn't figuring it out. All of a sudden, post-June, he's completely changed himself. No, he's not hitting home runs at record numbers, but he's getting on base, and I really don't care. If you're getting a single and a walk, or a pair of singles, a single and a double, the occasional home run, you're doing your job. There's really nothing we can say. And if you have a bad next series or the series after that, I'm going to call it an anomaly, because I think at this point you have to start saying, yes, we can count on Yoshida, because if Yoshida, again, does not appear in that 12-10 game, we lose that game and we've only won one game out of the series. So it's because of Yoshida, not in spite of him. He's done fantastic. He is, if he's not somebody's stud, he's an honorable mention, because he's been absolutely tearing it up. And I have nothing ill that I can say about him. You know, we make those jokes, Terry, you know, we bust you up because we know that you wanted him out. And I mean, I think at certain points, all of us kind of said the same thing. Like, it's just kind of dead money and it's not working out, but it's looking really, really good. And I'm really happy with what I've seen from him thus far, especially over the last 2 months. He's been one of the better players in baseball. And as I always like to say, numbers do not lie. So, Terry, would you like to go first?
Sure. I keep getting stuck with him on the midweek. So the audience has seen me give forced takes about him, you know, being a stud. Having said that, he had arguably one of your biggest hits of the whole series. That was in game two. The Red Sox were up 5-4. He hits a 3-run bomb, makes it 8-4. Now, there was still all kinds of shenanigans. The score got run up even more by both teams, but gave you some breathing room there. 7-11 on the series in the last 30 days, my favorite time frame. He is fourth in Major League Baseball in on-base percentage, behind only Aaron Judge, Vladimir Guerrero, who Jeremy and I would trade Casas for, Bobby Witt, and then Yoshida comes in fourth. Let's see where he is in average in that time. Looks like he's sixth. Put Gavin Lux and Jake McCarthy, of all people, above him. We'll be seeing McCarthy next weekend when the Diamondbacks come to town. And just because I like being thorough, what's the OPS? Wow, he's all the way down to 11th as far as that. But he's one of the best players in Major League Baseball in the last month. So having said that, and like I've said every time, what makes me truly happy is the trade value is rising. And if he can just go nuts for another 5 weeks here, I think he's movable for most, if not all, of his salary if he continues this clip.
Jeremy, I'm going to let you go first before I just, you know, unzip Terry's take there. Go ahead, Jeremy. Oh, you want me to go first? Okay, with pleasure. So, Terry, why are you trying to get rid of players right now that are actually helping us win games?
Because he's a platoon DH that's making $18 million, and I don't think we should have a platoon DH.
Okay, cool. So Yoshida continues to tear it up and is hitting 350, 360 for the remainder of August and then blows up and hits 390 for September. You're still going to get rid of him?
I would drive him to the airport.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, all right, you another team comes calling and says, yeah, sure, we'll take him, but we're not willing to eat up that money. Are you willing to eat up that money?
I think we're like, no, we'll hold on to him. Somebody will take him for basically his full contract.
Okay. So,
and I'll take it a step further.
You've learned nothing from Chris Sale. You've learned literally nothing from Chris Sale.
Oh, he's got way more value right now than Chris Sale did. Chris Sale was going to be on the injured list by May.
Chris Sale is one of the best pitchers in 2024, Terrence.
Yeah, but not before we traded him.
No, that's true. But, you know, we were still stuck on the idea that he wasn't going to be able to rebound. There's a lot of people that have done that. But
that's the biggest apples to oranges comparison. Yoshida to Sale. Sale was busted.
Yoshida hits 325 with 20 homers, 90 RBIs, plays 145 games. If before anything happens, right, before we even throw out predictions for Yoshida, right, we're willing to eat half his contract. Would you do it? We'll take half of that contract.
No, because I'm going to force a team to take more of it.
And there's no team available. No team will take it. What would you do then? Would you settle?
Well, Charlie, if he's so good, yet no team will take the contract, will take it more than half, then what are we talking about? He's not that good then. So they're gonna take the contract if he's that good. And if he's not that good, what are we talking about?
I don't think there's gonna be a team that takes your sheet off our hands. I really don't. And I think that in order for a team to do it, regardless of how much money gets eaten up, it could be like a minuscule amount. They're going to want a prospect just with the fear that it blows up in their face. No team is going to take a risk. Also, we don't have a GM that's going to be able to like try to jazz it up and fluff the deal to make it look like it's going to be something pretty.
Well, like I said on the midweek, just a handful of days ago, this isn't the Xander Bogaerts contract. This isn't nine years of pain.
You're right.
It's 3 years of someone that's probably going to be serviceable for you if you need the offense to do it. If you don't want to give Juan Soto $500 million, but Yoshida can give you a nice little boost for 18 per year for 3 years, I think we could do it. And the bad thing we're dealing with right now is Breslow sucks at his job. Dave Dombrowski could trade Masataki Yoshida for a good trade. The circumstances would be favorable. Let's put it that way. I don't know that Breslow can do it.
I don't think so. I really don't, given what we've seen so far in the moves. And we're going to get to that when we talk about the sad side of affairs. But I want to hear Jeremy's input here, too.
I mean, if Yoshida was on a 3-year, $24 million deal, no one would hate him. You know, it's a product of the contract, which always blows my mind because it's like it's not the player's fault. The team made a bad decision on the money. So, again, I go back to the people that are at fault for giving away that amount of money to an international player with no track record for playing in America. Now, having said that, he is playing at a pretty high level. I don't know, it's 18 million, but he's a 10 plus million player if he's playing like this. And he's shown that he can do it. There was the first half of last year and now basically the second half of this year, absent the hand injury. You don't know where he'd be, especially with the power numbers. So there's some other things that confuse me about why he was signed to this roster. This roster is pretty athletic for a baseball team. They obviously want to win a certain type of way. They want to take advantage of the pitch clock and not have it capture them. They want to use it to run and play small ball and force pressure and draw two throws so you know a third one's not coming, you know, which Hamilton does pretty well. He doesn't fit in any form or fashion with the rest of the roster. So if you can move him from like a balancing the roster standpoint, I totally get it. I'd obviously want to know what the big league talent you're getting back is. But he's on our roster. I like the guy. He like clearly loves baseball. His teammates seemingly like him. I don't have any intel on that. And he hits. You don't have to hide him against lefties. He hits. In addition to the 7 hits, he walked twice. He got on base 9 times. He was a nightmare for the Orioles. You know, he runs like a computer-generated running machine, but like,
it's ugly.
It's so bad. It looks like he has to say to himself, left leg, right leg, left leg, right leg. Like, remind him. But the fact is he hits the ball to all three fields. And here's the other thing. When we need a hit, especially since that home run in the Yankees series, he delivers. I mean, in those late moments, runners on base, he delivers. He's been very consistent and he's been healthy and he's been in the lineup. And no matter where Cora has put him, a lot of the times third, which isn't going to happen anymore, probably with Cassis back, it doesn't matter. Hit him third, hit him sixth, hit him eighth, hit him fourth. It doesn't matter. He hits. He hits the ball. He puts it in play. You know, and we need this. We need our left hand, a couple outside of Devers and Duran. You need a left-handed hitter that can hit a lefty, and he is.
I mean, I can't add much to it. Terry, anything else you want to add?
So his numbers against lefties have ticked up some. Last I checked, he was hitting 167 against them. He's got that number up to 208, so not putrid anymore. His on base, though, like Jeremy says, he is drawing walks against lefties. So he's not up there completely lost against them. Where he's not crushing it is he's just not hitting for power. So you're getting your slappy singles in those at-bats when he does get hits. As far as his running goes, he runs like he has to poop. Remember that next time he runs.
It's very bizarre. And today we see him running past first base and then like stop and then kind of like run in a little weird turn and then get back to first base. It was very awkward. Not like he got
does
injured.
That every time.
Just, I know, it's just this one looked a little odd, more awkward than normal. He wasn't what I saw, at least this one in particular. It didn't even look like he was looking at the base, wasn't looking straight ahead. It was like, please just remember you have to touch first base first. Like it was very like, I don't know. It was odd. Yes, it's a hit. I'm not going to complain about it. It's just goofy running. That's it. But if you get a single and you want a goofy run every time, go for it. I don't care. Anything else we want to add on Yoshida? No, random. Perfect. So a couple honorable mentions. I know this, you know, Jeremy's offered his input here, his feedback. I've mentioned someone in the dud section when they pitched a quality start. So I'm going to try to level up here and correct my wrong. Although it's not a quality start, 3 hits in 5 innings for Pivetta, striking out 6. Not a bad performance for him. Not great. Would have loved to get a 6th inning out of Pivetta, but not bad. Cutter Crawford did get you 6 innings, allowed 1 run on 2 hits, also struck out 6. Lucas Sims did okay in his 2 performances, an inning and a third, only walked a batter, picked up a couple of holds. Duran also did all right. The batting average wasn't fantastic, but stole base in a couple bases, had a really clutch hit in that 5-1 game, which made the, you know, began getting the game a little bit out of hand. He's a terror, man. It's Duran, Devers, and Yoshida, you know. Devers also had a good game in that game too, went 2 for 4, had a home run, you know. So a lot of upside. If there's any other gents you guys want to mention for studs, honorable mentions.
I'll just say I can't believe Casas came back the way he did. Very, very optimistic on that front. I did not expect that.
Well, dry swings work wonders, Jeremy. I mean, I'm actually curious to know what his batting average was on the overall for the dry swings. I wonder if he had over 300. I am curious. I hope somebody asks him that. Terry, anybody else you want to add?
I think those were all singles from Casas, but in his mind, they were probably triples. But yeah, so about him, though, so it was nice to see that he's seeing the ball good. I mean, if he's putting the ball in play and getting on base, I mean, that's great. Eventually, we're going to want to see the power come back. Hopefully, it does, but not a bad first series back. He came back for game 2. David Hamilton. All 5 singles, yeah. Yeah, he wasn't really – there couldn't have been a lot of exit velocity on him, but still, you'll take it. David Hamilton, good series. Had a home run game 2 in there. That was the home run party. 4 or 5 guys had him. But good series for him against a big team. One of the Devers home runs, the Saturday night one, put that game out of reach. We're up 2-1. Or maybe it was 3-1, and it was a 2-run bomb. So that was good, and I'll just leave it at that.
So one thing, because you mentioned Hamilton too, and they've talked about this on the show. Jaren Duran after today and David Hamilton each have 31 stolen bases, and they're talking you have to go back over 100 years. We talked about this earlier this year about the fact that the Red Sox have never had 2 teammates that have tagged 40. And that being said, with a month and a half left of baseball, do you think that David Hamilton and Jaren Duran will be able to both hit 40? Because I personally do. I said it earlier this year where I think we're going to see teammates have 40 stolen bases for the first time in Boston Red Sox history, which is pretty cool considering the year that we've had. Do either one of you guys think that'll happen?
I think it's possible with Duran, especially if we can stay within a few games. I think the pressure will be on to, you know, do a little bit more. I think that could help get him there. I'm a little more pessimistic about Hamilton just because he's probably not going to be getting many starts against lefties. So his path is a little harder.
Right. So then there's an opportunity to do some pinch running. And if that's the case, I mean, you can't deny that somebody like that with wheels for days is not going to get the go.
I'd love to see him do it. I just think it's a harder path.
Yeah. Jeremy, do you think it's possible?
No, because I think Story's going to come back and get at bats, and you're not going to see Hamilton.
Good point.
So
Interesting take.
So I don't think it's possible. Also, they would have to extremely accelerate their rate. Tenon. Well, no, I guess we still have.
We got decent.
No, the answer is no. The answer is no. I mean, again, and I don't want it. We talked about it last time, so I don't think we need to beat a dead horse. But Story's going to come back and take away Hamilton's at bats, and that for that reason, I don't think they will both get 40. It's Fair been enough. Fun to watch, man. And there's, oh, I would so cool. much rather the havoc and the athleticism than three-run jacks. I know it's easier in that later scenario, but they are so much fun to watch when they are Absolutely. Putting pressure on the defense and forcing forcing errors on the defense. So,
absolutely agree. Perfect. Well, let's make our way over into the not so fun part of the series or baseball. Terry, why don't you lead us off with your dud?
My dud is, I'm going outside the box here, is going to be the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred. So it's come out. I don't know if they're framing it as if Manfred wants this because they're saying MLB wants it, but it's Manfred as far as I'm concerned. And what they're trying to do next, the next radical change they're trying to do to the game is force starting pitchers to go a minimum of either 6 innings or 95 pitches, whichever comes first. I was unclear on the 95 pitches today until I tweeted it. Shocker. So I don't like it. They shouldn't be messing with the natural elements of the game, okay? That would get rid of the opener, and I think the opener is critical at times. And I think if a guy doesn't have it in the third inning and he's 60 pitches in, stressful innings are still bad on elbows. It's going to make a pitcher more prone to it. And I feel like, and I've said this all along, you know, when they did the three batter minimum and the ghost runner, I'm like, well, what's the next thing? This isn't going to be good enough. They're going to mess with something else. And this isn't something I ever would have foresaw. Okay. But here we are. It's the next radical thing. So if we allow this, what's the next stupid thing? When does it end? The thing I miss the most, I hate the three batter minimum. I hate that more than anything they've done so far. And the reason I hate it is it takes away the chess match between good managers. Go back to 04 and 07 when you were playing the Yankees. It was always Francona versus Joe Torre, and it was a chess match, and it was so fascinating to watch. And they're watering down the game. Just leave it alone. Leave it alone. I'm sick of it. Let the managers do what they have to do.
Jeremy?
I like it. Let's go. I really do. And here's the other thing I think Terry's missing. From what I've heard of the basis for the rule, as like he said, 95 pitches, 6 innings, and I think it's four runs. If you meet either any of those three requirements, you can pull them. So this isn't a situation where a guy's out there having given up 7 earned runs. I mean, you can move on from a guy under my understanding of the format. I love it. I really do. I think it goes back to putting importance on more strategy, pitching to contact, developing your pitching, having depth in the organization, which is not good for Boston right now. The rule will not help us. I can guarantee you that. But giving guys identified roles, sticking to it, making sure they're stretched out, using the AAA system to go down and have innings and have guys ready. I like it. It brings us back more to the way baseball was played, in my youth. Although I do like the new rules. I like it. I get rid of the opener, force teams to use the entirety of the system's roster and build smart, dependable, deep rosters. I mean, I like it.
I think we're forcing teams to potentially speed the clock up on players that may not be ready. You could essentially run the risk of destroying a kid's confidence by bringing them up too early. They're not going to be like Paul Skeens right out of the gate every single time. And you're going to see pitchers get rocked unless he hits 100. I mean, our starters don't throw 100 pitches. How many pitches did Bayo throw or did Crawford throw in their starts? I have to look because I don't remember. Crawford, 75 pitches. Bayo, 97. So he was right there. I feel, you know, my rule of thumb is 15 pitches per inning if you're on it. If you've thrown more, like these pitchers that throw 33, 37 pitches in an inning, good Lord, you're going to be done after four, maybe five if you're lucky. But gone are the days of pitchers going 120 to 130. That just doesn't happen anymore. And I think toying with the idea of having pitchers go 100 pitches, you know, six innings, allow four runs. I had a look back at the article, or gets injured, which then would also require a stint on the IL to avoid manipulation of rosters. We've learned nothing. Pitchers are already getting injured because we have the pitch clock. So I think if you're going to enable this six, no, Jeremy, no, here's the thing. So six innings, 100 pitches, fine. Eliminate the pitch clock for 15 seconds every single pitch. Major League Baseball is a far worse product when the elite pitchers in baseball are not in the game. The Braves lost one of the most exciting talents, a guy who was a lock to get 300 strikeouts. For what? Because of 15 seconds? That's BS. I mean, it's a garbage product if we're going to continue tinkering and toying with the rules if it's you know, broken, but in a different manner. I think that if you want to make the game better, don't make it 15 seconds the entire game. If a pitcher has thrown X amount of pitches and is still gone four plus innings and they need to take an extra 5 or 6 seconds, give them the extra 5 or 6 seconds. It's not worth the injury. It's ridiculous. Yes, Jeremy.
I disagree. I don't think the pitch clock is the primary factor for the uptick in injuries. I think it's the stress that the current day athlete is putting on max velocity, max spin rate. And what one of the things I said, and I think it got overlooked, is pitch to contact. Pitch to contact. Like, use your defense. Not everything needs to be a swing and a miss. So if you are a guy that has a two-seamer, a cutter, a sinker, there's no reason not to be in the strike zone with soft contact. So I don't think everything has to be 102 miles an hour under that format. And the guys that want to throw 102 should do it in the seventh inning. But if you want to be a starting pitcher, and by the way, the value of contracts is going to go up under this format for starting pitchers tremendously. So you want to be a starting pitcher. You want to be a guy who can be relied on for six innings. You develop a pitch where you can get soft contact. Not everything has to be 100 on the corner or a 15-mile-an-hour difference with a changeup and have a swing and miss. There's times for that. It's extremely important. Man on third, one out. Yes, now we got to turn it on. Now this is my best stuff. But if there's no one on, it's two outs, you shouldn't be trying to strike that guy out. You should be trying to jam him or get soft contact and move on and limit your time and your pitch count. And there's nothing wrong with that. That was part of baseball. And obviously he's the greatest at doing it, but Greg Maddux is a perfect example. He punched guys out, but he was out there to get soft contact.
Right.
So I'm not I'm not saying that it's I don't hate it like Terry does. I'm not Rob Manfred ready to implement it tomorrow. I think teams should have a 2, probably 3 year heads up on this, because it tremendously affects the way you build your roster. But I like the idea of this rule. I think it puts importance on getting those first 18 outs and having guys that know how to pitch, not just know how to throw hard, know how to pitch. It's important. And I think it's going to make games go better. And by the way, it's going to be entertaining to see a guy implode. It is.
Have you been watching the Boston Red Sox history? There's been plenty of that. They allowed 20 runs against Colorado. I mean, that was awful. That literally that day, and I don't encourage day drinking. I actually had a drink during the day because it was ridiculous. I was like, you got to be joking. To Colorado, 20 runs. And I mean, that was also the series where, you know, an embarrassing argument took place between both teams. It's just, we've had plenty of moments. It doesn't even need to be pitchers, like, you know, getting lit up like a Christmas tree, but I'm good with one Christmas a year. I don't need 30 of them. And that's what's going to happen if you're going to force people like, you know, Cooper Criswell to throw 100 pitches. Because he's not going to throw 100 because he's going to allow 4 runs way before that. But, I mean, what are we doing if we do that? Like, I agree with you. I think that the cost of a starting pitcher is going to go up. It has to, by definition of the rules that would take place, right? But I don't think this is necessarily going to help baseball be a better product. Terry.
So I agree with Charlie in terms of the pitch clock. We don't have hardcore data, but I feel more likely than not it has been a culprit to some of these injuries. I've never seen our own team as injured as it has been. So many guys have luckily gotten just short-term injuries, but we're up to 2 or 3 Tommy Johns already. And I would just add a few more seconds to it and stop there. But and then getting back to the actual, 6-inning requirement, that's not good for small market teams. Okay, they're gonna be the ones that get hurt the most. And I just think it just doesn't help the greater good of the sport to take a radical step like that. I don't think so. And what I have noticed is it seems like teams have an advantage when they do have a bullpen game. We typically win most of our bullpen games. And I when Tampa's done it to us, we typically don't win those games. So I think we need to keep the playing field level and let teams do it the way that they want to do it. And Jeremy has his take. I have mine. We'll let the audience decide. I mean, we're all making fair points, but I feel very strongly about it is all I'm going to say.
So here's the thing. So let's say that we institute Jeremy's rule. This is what we would like to happen. You know, you throw 6 innings, but if you can't, you don't opt to do it. No bonus at the end of the year. Incentivize it for teams that want to do it. The teams that do it automatically, if you've had X amount of games and it's reverse order based on record, you're in a different group. It means you have a higher draft pick than everybody else. You know, that way these smaller market teams that absolutely under no stretch of the imagination are going to be, you know, able to do this. As you mentioned, the small market teams are going to be the ones that get absolutely destroyed by this. It's not going to hurt teams like the New York Yankees, the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Mariners are in there. You know, they're going to have starting pitching. The Boston Red Sox should be one of those teams, but I don't know if that's going to happen. But maybe you offer a benefit to those teams in some manner. I don't know. To your point, I also feel really strongly because as soon as Spencer Strider went down, I mean, it was like the dominoes. It was one went down. The next day, another one went down. Another day, you know, two more went down. And it was crazy. Back in the 90s, I can't tell you how many players were done for the year for shoulder injuries. I really don't remember it being as common. It'd be like, oh, shoulder tightness or, like this one was like a torn, like a rotator cuff. That'd be like once every career. Now we're seeing players have a major injury. Not all of our players, but players in baseball have 2 Tommy Johns. 3 Tommy Johns. It's just, it's insane. And, you know, baseball, like I said, is a better product and the better players are in the game. And that's all I'll say. Anything else you guys want to add to that one? Shifting right over to Jeremy, who is your dud, good sir?
My dud is Danny Jansen, who went 0-for-6 with 3 strikeouts and dropped a fly ball in the Little League World Series. Behind home plate. I'm not really upset at the player. I mean, he's not getting a lot of at-bats for good reason. Wong's a much better player, preeminent offensive catcher. Again, I just go back to the idea that it was peddled to us that Jansen was the right-handed bat that was coming in to reinforce this roster. That preeminent at-bat got 6 at-bats in a 4-game series. It's a move that didn't have to be made. McGuire was serviceable. And it just goes to show you that the shopping checklist and all this other happy bullshit. Oh, can't swear. Whoops.
Swear jar.
Yep. Take it back. It's just, the lie is, they never ran the lie by Alex Cora, you know, and he got off to a hard start and everyone was, you know, saying since this date, you know, right-handed hitters and this and that to peddle the lie. But I mean, it's still a glaring weakness. And the fact that he only even got six at bats puts him on this list, in my opinion, at least from an organizational standpoint. And the fact that of those six at bats, he got zero hits and struck out half the time. I mean, he's a non-factor.
Terrence.
What we needed was a Tyler O'Neill type guy who's just a little bit healthy, strikes out a little bit less. You could have found that somewhere. You know who my guy was. And that team did not give up a lot for my guy, Randy Arozarena. It's just an underwhelming move. It's an underwhelming move. The move sucked. Breslow sucks. That's my take.
Dynamite input there. But yeah, I mean, Dan Jansen, I believe, was option number, I forget the tweet, Terry. I think you said it was like number 174, 172. And I've mentioned it multiple times, yeah. And you're not wrong. Like, that one hurt. And Danny Jansen's had some cool moments, you know, some special moments where he's, you know, he's had a home run and it's been ugly. But overall, like, as great as it is to have him here, he is doing better as a member of the Red Sox than he did as a member of the Orioles in any year. Granted, this is a small sample size, but this wasn't the move that should have been prioritized. And I think all of us were left scratching our heads with, you know, we need to get a starter. We need to get a reliever. We need to get a power right-handed bat or just a right-handed bat. And, you know, technically, yes, we did do those three things, but they weren't really the sexy names that we were expecting or trying to get or looking to get. It was something a lot less. So, yeah, I mean, going 0-for-6, you had a pinch hitting game. You came in as a defensive replacement in the fourth game. But if your role's behind, you're not going to be counted on for offense, then we need to be able to count on you for defense. And we're not expecting you to hit home runs and get on base on a regular basis at a regular clip. So it was a little tough, that's for sure. But my hope is that Danny Jansen can build on this, because there's going to be some high expectations for him. If it's not going to be Wong behind the plate, it's going to be him. There are no other options. I don't think, what's that guy's name?
Mickey Gasper.
I don't think he's going to be getting any chances. He struck out in an ugly one in the dirt today, and he had a nice at bat up until that last pitch where it was clearly a ball. It was not going to stay up, and he genuflected when he swung and missed. So just unlucky, and a series that, you know, Danny and us both want to forget. Anything else you guys want to add? All right, so I'm glad that we all get to sit for this one, because I rarely get fired up or upset, and I am really, really unhappy. So when the Red Sox got Luis Garcia, they shelled four prospects for somebody that was, if I'm not mistaken, 37 years old. I think he's a year younger than Martin, if I'm not mistaken. And am I right? Am I wrong? I don't know now.
He will be 38 in January.
Right. So we dish out four prospects. One was injured. Lugo was injured for a little bit. Heffer John's actually done he's had a decent clip so far in AAA. But ever since joining the Red Sox, I'm really confused why we got him. In seven appearances, like in this series, for example, awful. Got absolutely shelled. One inning, three runs all earned, four hits. Struck a guy out, but gave up a home run. In seven appearances as a member of the Red Sox, he's allowed at least one run. In the last three, he's allowed two earned or more, and two of those three, he allowed three or five earned. He has gotten absolutely destroyed. His ERA right now as a member of the Red Sox sits at 14.09. He actually has a hold, but he's allowed 16 hits, 13 runs, 12 of which are earned in 7 2/3. The guy is averaging almost two earned runs an inning. and he's allowing over two hits per inning. What in the name of Jesus is this guy doing in our bullpen other than eating innings? He was fine in LA, but all of a sudden he can't figure it out as a member of the Red Sox. I mean, I'm this is like, and Terry's going to have to remember because I forget, 3 years ago we had a pitcher that every single time he came out, he was my dud for the year.
Matt
Who was
Hall.
That? Matt Hall. Thank you. He sucked. He was so bad. Every single time I saw him in the bullpen, I got upset. It was infuriating because he was just so bad. And then we had, you know, a couple other guys after that that weren't – they were bad. But then you remember Matt Hall and you're like, no, nah, man, you suck, but you don't suck that bad. This guy is giving Matt Hall a run for his money. Literally wants a share of the suckiest player in a Red Sox uniform. And we really don't have that many guys that are like bad. There are a couple that I'm okay if they leave, but this one I want gone. I want him to come back to his hotel room and his stuff is already like on the bus. Like, we're sending you anywhere else because it's a nightmare. I don't know what his purpose is in Boston. It's been terrible. And as a Red Sox fan, if I see him throwing in the bullpen and I have anything less than a 4-run lead, I'm nervous because Garcia is going to be that guy that unintentionally makes the game exciting for the wrong team, the team that's not paying him. So just brutal. Garcia, just another bad series, and it's not fun. Every single time he comes in, it's going to raise your blood pressure, give you a heart attack. It's not fun. Jeremy, anything you want to add about Garcia?
Yeah, my analysis of the player is that he sucks. I would speak, if I haven't already, I'd speak on the joke of a deadline. Breslow peddling that this was an arm we targeted and went and got to check off one of our grocery items. It's an absolute joke. And you got to find a way to bury him in the fifth or sixth inning of a short start and hope he can find three outs. He's been absolutely trash.
Yeah, Terry.
So my primary concern about him is, are they going to keep putting him in high leverage spots to try to justify the trade and then watch it blow up? That's exactly what happened in one of those Texas games where Martin should have gotten the eighth. Absolutely, Martin should have gotten the eighth. You win that game, game three of that series, if Martin gets it. But they went with Garcia and we got cooked. As far as the shopping list, it's all essentially blown up at this point. Nobody's giving you anything except a little bit from Lucas Sims. And once Slayton comes back, he's going to take the slot that Sims has. So you're essentially the same team as before the deadline. You're the same team. The same people that carried you up to the deadline are carrying you now. And at this point, when you're looking at the shopping list, you're just wondering which parts of the store they all came from. Because, I mean, Garcia came from the plumbing section, apparently, you know, because he belongs somewhere between the toilet and the septic tank. And it's just terrible. All I wanted from Breslow, I mean, I told you the specifics, but just show me you know how to do it. Show me you know how to do your job. And I don't think he showed me anything. He did not understand the assignment, and it was a dud of a trade line after a dud of a winter, and Garcia is the face of it right now, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't remember the last time that we picked. I mean, it's, do you guys remember when we got Eric Gagne? And I mean, this is not Eric Gagne.
No.
But he was horrible. He was just flat bad. Hall was worse. And honestly, now, you know, I have to look back. I have to remember how bad he was because I don't remember if his numbers exceeded an ERA of 14. I have to look back because I don't remember him being this bad. And I torched Matt Hall. Okay, you guys ready for this? Matt Hall had an ERA of 18.69, allowed 18 runs in 8 2/3. He was last in baseball in 2020, had never really been even a relevant guy. His career numbers allowed 51 earned runs in 40 innings on three teams, never won a game, lost four. So Yeah, if Garcia ends up continuing on this trajectory, he might actually get an ERA of 20. I mean, it's just, it's so, I don't want to see him even in the bullpen. I don't want to see him in the dugout in the game, in a game where we're up by three. I don't want him to be in there. I don't want to see him. I don't want to talk about him. If he gets DFA'd, I will not lose any sleep. I would rather have Dom Smith pitch than Luis Garcia. Because at least Dom Smith can throw, you know, 10, 15 pitches. He might not get a strikeout. Garcia's not going to blow anything away either. No one's going to hit one out of the park off of Dom Smith, you know? So, yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. I just, sometimes when we make decisions to DFA certain people, I'm left wondering, scratching my head. And then, you know, we keep others just as a matter of stupidity. And this is just one of those moves. Like, Dom Smith left because Casas came back. We got rid of the wrong guy. I mean, that's ultimately what happened. A couple other duds in this one. Horn came in, one run on two. It's the third of an inning. Criswell. Oh my God. Shield your eyes from this one, kids. 3 1/3 innings, 6 runs on 9 hits, walked 4. Well, perfect example. He's not going to hit 100 pitches. 6 earned and 3 1/3. You can kiss that one goodbye.
Well, he'll give up your 4 runs after 2/3 of an inning, and then he meets the criteria.
I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, Horn came out, you know, today. Excuse me, I should have corrected that. He 2 innings, gave up 2 runs. But I mean, if you're giving up a run every inning, that's of no use to us. You know, that's like half of Garcia's damage. I mean, Horn, Garcia, Bernardino, like, I'm actually shocked Bernardino didn't give up 2 runs. It's just, and here's the other thing too. In some of their defenses, you know, when you give up a home run to, you know, Adley Rutschman or Gunnar Henderson or even Anthony Santander, who surprisingly didn't play in this game. He didn't play in the fourth game of the series, which was a little bit of a head scratcher. I think that had he been in that game earlier, I think they probably would have jumped on us sooner. But that kind of also added to the fact that Crawford in the fourth game did well. Their starting pitcher did absolutely phenomenal. Albert Suarez, who I did not know, admittedly so, until today, literally just 3 straight games, he's not allowed to run. He's been absolutely incredible. That's 18 2/3 innings, no runs allowed. His ERA's jumped down from 3.89 to a fantastic 3.18. So he's been electric, and man, oh man, how I wish we had guys like that, you know, on our team, because they're going to be able to give you 5 or 6 and shut the door. Any other dishonorable mentions that you just wanted to add?
I'm good.
Right on. Well, that is going to do it for all the Bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.